Welcome, everyone, to the N-Express Nintendo Podcast. I am your host for today. My name is Ricky D. Not joining me today is Tim Mason, because, listeners, right now, as we speak, Tim's wife is in labor. They are having their second child. So Tim will not be able to co-host the podcast with good reason, but joining me today, first, Marty Allen is back.
Hey, so happy to be here. Thank you for having me. Hooray, Tim!
Marty, you were the first person I wanted on the show because I was hoping you would have been playing Mario Kart, what is it, Live Circuit? Circuit Live?
Oh, rub it in, man. I would be if I could be. I can't find it anywhere.
I would know the official title of the game if not for it being sold out everywhere.
Mario Kart Live Circuit? Mario Kart Circuit Live? I don't know. Like, little race car Mario Kart. That's the one that it is. No, I don't have it. I can't get it anywhere.
Yeah, so we're not going to be talking about Mario Kart, which was the original plan, because it is sold out. And unfortunately, Nintendo ran out of a review copy, so we did not get a review copy. But joining us also is Cameron Daxton and Campbell Gill, both of which have also appeared on the podcast in the past. What's up, guys?
Hello, hello.
Hello, everyone.
Here's the deal for our listeners. This is going to be a very strange show because Patrick is not here and Tim is not here. Now, you guys have been on the show, so you're not strangers to the podcast, but I haven't really had time to play any new games. I've been busy playing Animal Crossing, which I still love, which we could talk about in the near future, maybe closer to Halloween. And I've been playing Super Smash because now Steve is in the game, which is great. And I've been playing Paper Mario, which I still want to do a full review of because I really like this game. And I'm not entirely sure why people dislike it. I think for a Paper Mario game, it's actually better than the last game. But I do like the writing better in the last game, Color Splash. But anyways, all that to say is that this show, listeners, we're going to be playing catch up on a lot of indie games that we just haven't had time to talk about on the podcast for many reasons, because there's so many great, amazing indie games coming out week after week. So, Marty, I actually want you to start, because you have been playing a game from Thunder Lotus.
Correct.
It's called Spiritfarer.
Yes.
I'm interested in this game because I actually had a job interview last year. Oh. I was supposed to work with this company, and I ended up working somewhere else. So I know these guys really well. I know what they do, and I know about this game. I've actually known about this game for a long time before it was even announced. I've seen the demo before they even released the demo. So I haven't had a chance to play it, but I'm very, very curious to know if you like the game, because it looks pretty, pretty awesome.
Well, I am very curious about all of this gossip as context, but yes, the short answer is I definitely love this game. I mean, there's been a lot of games I've loved this year, but it's in the strong top five for me as one of the contenders of Game of the Year. Yeah, I mean, you want me to just go on and on about it? Do you have any questions about it specifically?
I mean, I like I said, I know a lot about the game. It's not really gossip. I live in Montreal, and it's I've talked about this on the podcast. There's there's actually two places in Montreal where a lot of indie game studios rent out the exact same building, and they all work out of the same building. So if you meet one team, you meet all of the teams. And so I had a bunch of interviews when I was looking for jobs last year. This is one of the companies I interviewed with. I ended up working at a radio station. But this company, like, the thing about this company is they're known for Jotun and Sundered, and we raved about those games on this podcast as well. So this is the only one I haven't yet played.
Wow, Rick, that's amazing. I did not even put together that this was the same team who did Jotun, which I also loved. I just picked this up because I loved the style. I mean, yeah, it's I do love it, in short, though it seems like they must work their dev team really hard. It's like Stardew Valley, like, meets a Tamagotchi, but in the visual style of, like, a Miyazaki film. It's really a gorgeous game. You're this lead character, this little... I guess, I don't know if it's a girl or a boy, Stella, and you've taken over for the the fairy master of the dead, Charon, who funnily enough is also in Hades. But it's not like it's not a dark game, but it is about death, and it's about coping, and it's about grief. But it's also like really cozy and really beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's got this kind of a loop to it where you find a spirit and they move on to your big boat and you help them get ready for their final passage. And like you do that by like feeding them things that they like, and you build them houses and rooms, and as you do it, their stories kind of unfold. And the stories are like pretty deep and pretty touching, you know. It's like it's a really good game.
It's basically like Animal Crossing. It takes place on a giant boat. Instead of animals, it's spirits. And yeah, that's pretty much it. It's not, it's weird. It addresses like topics that I would say are mature, but I don't think the game is made for an adult audience. I think anyone can play it.
I was actually a little surprised by that. Like, 'cause the presentation makes you feel a little bit like it could be for anybody, but they do touch on some pretty adult stuff. I mean, like adult themes, and like some of the characters straight up curse, like they've lived very adult lives. It almost took me by surprise, but I thought it was really good. Like the characters are well structured. They're thought out stories around their characters.
Well, I think the game is rated T for teen.
I think that flies all right.
But the thing is, like, it's weird because I live in Montreal, right? So for example, if a movie's rated say R or PG, if a movie is rated 18 in the States, it's rated like PG-13 here in Montreal. It's like crazy. If a movie is rated R for you guys, it might be rated G for us.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so for games, I think it's rated 12 here.
Yeah, maybe my slightly more puritanical lens is affecting it. But yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. And you're right about the Animal Crossing comparison. That's in there too. I see Stardew having played both of those games a lot, it just feels a little bit more like Stardew to me. But, you know, those are close comparisons. Like, there's tons of tasks that you have to do, and they accumulate. You fish and you cook and you grow vegetables. And as you get more tasks, you get more stuff to do. Eventually, you can loom and you can, you know, do woodwork. And, you know, you accumulate more tasks and more story rolls by, and everything's like a little mini game though. And some of them, like, I think maybe for some people they would get a little repetitive. But I like them. They have like really good distinct presentation. There's like for instance, like you have to catch lightning is one of many mini games, but like all you have to do is just like stand right where it is, but they present it with like dramatic music, and you're like, you know, you feel like really excited. And yeah, I mean, it is really, really beautiful. Like the animations are gorgeous. This game has some of the most beautiful hugging animation I've ever seen. And that's one of the things that you do. Like, you're maintaining the well-being of these little characters, these spirits on your boat, and you like hug them and feed them stuff that you cook. But it feels ambitious too, like to that point of it's like big. It almost feels like it got bigger than they knew they could deal with. Like, sometimes you can sense a little bit of like cut and paste to it. But it didn't take me out of the game. I love it. I recommend it like really, really highly. If calling it Stardew, Animal Crossing, Tamagotchi, if that's your deal, then like play it, please.
So the thing about this game, and I remember I said this during the job interview, it's one of those games that's really going to take off based on the community. And I'm not entirely sure how people are reacting to the game online, because there's a lot of stories to tell. And I can imagine a lot of people writing articles and think pieces relating to the characters in the game, because they themselves went through a similar, whatever, like someone in their family died or whatever it is, right? Because there's various characters in this game and they all died for different reasons, and you get to know these characters and talk to them, like you said, Martina. And I feel like that's what I'm waiting for. And I don't know if this game was just released at the wrong time or it didn't have a good strong enough push in marketing, but I haven't seen anyone talk about this game. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, like, we were supposed to have a review and an interview on our website, and I don't think it got published, so I didn't even know that the game was released yet on Switch.
Oh, wow. That's funny. No, yeah. I mean, it wasn't mine for review, but I wouldn't be comfortable reviewing it right yet. And I actually wonder if this gets to the bottom of that a little bit. I do feel comfortable talking about it because I've played it for about 15 hours, I think, maybe. But, you know, to the point of it being a little repetitive, like, I wouldn't feel comfortable reviewing it because I haven't finished it. Like, it definitely, there's like a lot of game in there. And so I wonder if a lot of people haven't finished it. And so that's maybe like my slight reservation, where I do wonder somewhat how some of these stories are going to land and if they're going to stick the landing. You know, like, it deals heavily with grief and it's doing it very, very well. But I wouldn't be comfortable talking about it until I finished it, for sure. Outside of this context, I mean, I give that context openly here. You know, I'm not done with the game. I'm enjoying it tremendously.
All right. Well, the game is called Spiritfarer. It looks fantastic. You can now play it on the Nintendo Switch. Moving on to the next game, Shantae Campbell. What is up with your relationship with Shantae? Like, it's like, I feel like you're the go-to guy for this company, that every time they want an interview or a review, they specifically go to you.
I mean, what can I say? I've just really endeared myself to their WayForward's PR, you know? But I don't know, man. I love Shantae. And, you know, my role at Goomba Stomp is the indie games editor. But here's the thing, Shantae was my first indie game series that I ever really got into. I picked up Pirate's Curse back on the Wii U, and this was like years before I started games writing at all. So, you know, I just have like a sentimental connection with Shantae now. So whenever WayForward comes out with a new Shantae game or new re-release, I am on it. And I think I've pestered WayForward's PR guy enough that he has to give me review codes or interviews now. So
we're going to talk about Risky's Revenge, the director's cut. So what's the deal with the director's cut in this specific release here?
Yeah, so Shantae Risky's Revenge is the second game in the series, released in 2010, I believe, on the DS. And then a few years later, it got a director's cut when it got ported to PC and PS4. And the director's cut basically took the original game, it blew it up into widescreen, gave it a different, like, you know, visual options. It gave it a new difficulty mode, and new, it revamped the navigation system and the maps and stuff like that. So the director's cut just kind of fit for home consoles. That was in like 2014 or 2015, I want to say. And now WayForward has finally brought it to the latest Nintendo console. Now it's out on Switch. So that's why I reviewed it, and I can confirm that it is just as good today as it was in 2010. It is a wonderful little Metroidvania. You know, it is just a fun time. It's not super long. It only clocks in like a few hours. It's not like the most revolutionary Metroidvania ever made, but, you know, it's got all of the Shantae charm that fans love about this series. It's got the charming characters, just a well-designed world, a really just funny sense of humor with lots of puns and childish jokes and whatnot. It is just a fun time, all in all.
So that was my question, because it's called the director's cut, but you're saying you can finish the game in a few hours. So how long is the game compared to the original?
The original, it's like the same length, really. The main campaign is just about the same length as far as I can tell. The thing is, the director's cut adds in like a new super difficult mode that you unlock after you beat the game, that like it makes you weaker and you take more damage from enemies, but your magic gets more powerful. So it's kind of like a challenge mode. So like once you've mastered the short little campaign, you can really try test your skills in a new campaign that will probably take you a little longer, because I tried it out and it is kind of tough, you know? The older Shantae games were definitely no pushovers in terms of challenge. So the higher difficulty does add some replay value to it. So it, you know, if you're running through the main campaign, you can finish it in like, I want to say I finished it in about 5 hours or so. So that's like relatively short by Metroidvania standards. So
that's not bad. I mean, it's a great game to play alongside Spiritfarer, like a game that's going to probably take you forever to play because, like again, Spiritfarer, you know, Marty, you bring up the comparisons to Stardew Valley and Animal Crossing. It's a game that you can just pick up and play for, like, God knows how long. At least I assume so. I mean, it's a smaller game. It's an indie game. But this is like, this is what I like about these games. It's the kind of games you want to pick up in between the big games, right? In between the Zeldas and the Assassin's Creed. You want these small indie games to just, I don't know. That's how I look at it. That's how I play indie games. And right now I'm playing two big games, so I don't have time for indie games. I'm playing Assassin's Creed and I'm playing Last of Us. All right, so next, Cameron, what do you got for us?
I believe we're going to talk about Raji, is that correct?
An ancient epic, yeah. What is the story with this game? This game fascinates me. It looks great. It looks beautiful.
Sure, yeah. Well, I remember I first caught wind of this game during one of the Indie World showcases over the summertime. I can't remember which one. I think it was in August, somewhere in there. And I was watching this Indie World showcase, and this game popped up. I was like, this looks like Prince of Persia plus God of War. Like, it looked like kind of this blend of all these things. And then the developer, I think they had one of those little, like, very short developer interview segments after the trailer, something like that. And they were like, oh, we're excited to bring Raji to the Switch. And so I, like, you know, got on my Google after that, and we were able to get a review copy, and it's like super good. Pretty short, I would say, but like for what it is, it's a pretty solid kind of like, I don't know what you call it, isometric action hack and slash kind of game. Super, super good, and the art direction is quite stellar. Yeah, it's basically like God of War, only instead of you know, ancient Greece, it's like ancient India.
Well, it looks like Prince of Persia.
Well, just in terms of how, like, you're dealing with mobs and, like, you have powers bestowed upon you by, you know, deities. So to me, it does channel that aspect of a God of War type of game. But it does have a little of that Prince of Persia sort of, you know, wall running sort of look, that kind of stuff. Although it's less, I would say it's less platformy than Prince of Persia. But yeah, it's a really good game. And we were even able to score, Campbell helped me with this, score an interview with the people who made it, which was also very cool for the website.
Yeah, so so first of all, the review and the interview are over at GoombaStomp.com. I love this interview. Like, I highly recommend our listeners check out the interview. Just go to GoombaStomp.com and type in R-A-J-I. You can search it. That's Raji, an ancient empire. I have no idea who these guys are. Like, I have no idea.
This is their first game.
Oh, it's their first game. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. So the team is composed of, it's not like a huge team. It's an indie game still.
But they're based in India.
But they're based in India, and a lot of the people have worked for other companies.
Right, that's how it usually works, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, right, huh? Shocking.
It's like every indie game company in Montreal, like we spoke about Thunder Lotus Games, they all used to work at Ubisoft. So they work at Ubisoft, they make some money, and then afterward they start their own company.
They're kind of like a dream project, I guess. So from what I understand, this is their first game. They were very upfront about, like, oh, we really hope it's well received, but it seems to be doing pretty good business for them. I really hope they are able to take some of what they've done and make an awesome sequel, because the story ends on a cliffhanger. It's like, I want to see where it goes.
Really? It ends on a cliffhanger?
It ends on a crazy cliffhanger. Oh, yeah.
That is really cool. I've never heard of an indie game that's story-driven that's ended with a cliffhanger.
I got to the end. I was like, this can't be the end. And it was like, it really does feel like there's another chapter to the story or something like that. It really feels like they could flesh it out even more. Yeah, it's a good game. I recommend it. It was just the right length. You know what I mean? Like, for an indie game, you don't want to be playing an indie game like the rest of your life, you know?
I don't consider a short game a flaw. Like, I know a lot of people want longer games, but here's the thing. Like, everyone complains about wanting longer games because they feel they get more value for the package. But, like, honestly, we don't have time. There's so many games getting released per week that it's a good thing to have short. Like, as long, I mean, especially if this is a story-driven game and they purposely made it to end with a cliffhanger, but it tells a good story within the first game, even if you need the sequel to learn what happened. You know what I mean? Like, to me, it's like watching season one of Game of Thrones and then complaining that it's not long enough, but you're still going to get season 2, 3, 4, 5, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm actually kind of like when you say it's a shorter game, that like right away I'm going to put it on my list of games that I should maybe download or, and buy, because I don't really have time to play longer games at this point in time. Like I'm going to be playing Assassin's Creed, and that's about it for the rest of the year.
Yeah, yeah, I knocked it out in like a weekend. I would say I remember being a little surprised, like oh, I'm already at the end, which was, you know, it's a good feeling. And there's like collectibles and stuff if you want to kind of keep cruising through it. But yeah, just to kind of knock out the main story, it's not too arduous. I would say it definitely has, like, there's definitely room for improvement. Like, I encountered a couple of little glitches, but they didn't take away anything from the main experience.
All right, well, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about two more indie games. But before we take a break, just to let our listeners know, the NX Press podcast is going to be going through some changes for the better. In the next few weeks, we're going to expand the team. As I mentioned at the start of the show, Tim is having a baby. Well, his wife is having a baby right now, his second child. So he's busy. He's not leaving. He's sticking around. I'm not leaving. I'm sticking around, but I'm hosting three podcasts at the moment. So we're going to expand the team, which is what, and what makes us, the idea here is that with you guys coming on and Mark and Zach and Mike, like, there's enough people at Goomba Stomp that we just basically want to expand the NXPress team so we can produce more podcasts. That said, if you do subscribe to the podcast, if you listen on iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify, what have you, you will notice that every week I'm dropping what I call the best of the NXPress. And I'm going way back, guys, to 2015. I think I've released about 5 or 6 episodes, including our review of Super Mario Sunshine, our original review of the original 3 Super Nintendo Mario games. I released a really cool spot, I think yesterday, which is when my cousin Matt, who used to be the editor of Goomba Stomp, he came on. We had a huge debate about what the best Nintendo console of all time is. These are some amazing, amazing spots on that we recorded on the podcast. So I highly recommend checking it out. In the meantime, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about Hades and Short Hike. You're back here on the NXPress Nintendo podcast, and we are going to continue our discussion, our look, our preview, our review, I guess, of a bunch of indie games that we haven't had time to discuss yet on the podcast. And the next game is a game I think I'm going to download tonight. I'm not just saying that because, you know, I'm saying that because I actually mean it. Like, I need a new game to play to Short, and this game's actually called Short Hike. So I assume it's short, and I hear it's fantastic. In fact, I hear, Marty, it's one of the 5 best games released in 2020 so far.
Rick, I am compelled to agree with that assessment. It is short, to your point, and to the point of the name of the game, but it is just so darn wonderful. I mean, I spend time just kind of thinking about what makes this game so wonderful. It's just kind of like, it's this coming together of everything in it working really well. The visuals, the music, the gameplay, they just are all so lovely. You're like this little bird who needs to explore and hike up a mountain, and the mechanics are gorgeous, the style is gorgeous, the music is gorgeous. The characters are funny, and you can digest it so quickly, and it's really inexpensive. I honestly would encourage anyone who is listening to my voice and likes video games to play this game. It's just delightful.
Yeah, it's absurdly charming. I actually played it over the summer. I played it on Steam, actually. I know this is a Switch podcast, but I did play it on Steam before it came on Switch. And I took an afternoon to play it, and it was like one of the most pleasant, like, ways to kill an afternoon that I've had in a really long time. It was everything about it really does come together. It's such a good little game.
Yeah, I still think about, like, kind of kicking back into it sometimes, because, like, it's really short. There are, like, little bits to discover and stuff, like you're collecting these little treasure chests and stuff, and, like, you find new nooks and crannies. But I mean, also you kind of, you get to the culmination, as it were, and you feel like you've ingested this game. But to your point earlier, Rick, like, it's beautiful because it is the length that it really should be, and you want more. But, like, what a great way to leave any piece of art. You leave them wanting more. But yeah, it's fantastic.
Did you, how many, just curious, how many feathers did you wind up with by the end of it? Can you remember?
Oh, I don't remember. I had a lot. I mean, I definitely got a little bit gamey with it and sure, was trying to find as many as I could. I don't know if I 100%ed it or not. Do you remember?
I didn't 100% it. I thought about it. I'd have to look at my achievements page. I didn't get maybe like 75% or 80% somewhere in there.
The Switch is like less good about telling you that stuff.
Yeah.
Too. But I felt like I was getting close to the top, so to speak, of the amount that I could find. But I sense that there's maybe a couple more hiding in there, which does make me want to turn it on and dive back in a little bit. For
absolutely.
Sure.
Well, and there's so many little there's like the volleyball mini game. There's all these little thingies where I'm like, ooh, I kind of want to master this, even though it's like not at all the point of the game. It's like you still want to dive in and do that, you know?
Yeah, it's like every nook and cranny is just like filled with this charming little thing. Yeah, the volleyball game's like such a great example where you just stumble on these adorable and incredibly funny characters and play volleyball with them.
So like the humor is so good.
It's very funny. It's very smart. It's very dense. You know, it's like it's a small map, but like, you know, you're always climbing. And I guess maybe we should explain like the real thrust of the game is that
explain what the game is. Maybe.
Well, isn't it an RPG?
No, it's just
an exploration adventure game. So you're a little bird. You're on a quest to find higher ground, basically, to get to the peak of this mountain. So you have to explore, and in order to do so, you climb or you flap upwards. So sorry, we skipped ahead. So the way that you climb and flap upwards is with a stamina system. It actually reminds me of Breath of the Wild. You get more feathers, more golden feathers, and you can climb harder or you can flap harder. And really that's it. There are other little mechanics that come in, but honestly, like they're great when you meet them. You know, it's like I don't want to over describe it, but that's like everything that happens. And you're climbing, you get a little higher, sometimes you fall down, but it's never that hard to get back where you were. And maybe you do come down and you discover a new nook or cranny, and you're doing little tasks for various people. You run into very, very cute little colorful characters like these volleyball guys, and then you get
so confused. like here's the thing: when you guys review a game or discuss a game that I haven't played, usually I can follow along, right? But you guys are talking about volleyball, a bird, a game designed by one man, but then you're comparing it to Breath of the Wild. Like, so, like, what is this?
It's all accurate. You just need to play it. That, honestly, all of these things are true. You know, there's just little mini games sort of tucked into nooks and crannies. So you, like, meet these little guys who are playing volleyball, and then you play with them. Or you meet, like, these people who are doing a foot race, and so you race with them.
Right.
Or
you meet, like, a little steeple. Kind of the thrust of the game is you're like a little bird. You're on an island. The island is kind of like a resort island. It's like a tourist trap island. Well, maybe that's not even accurate. It's like a little
camp.
It's like a summer camp. Yeah, exactly. So you got people there who are just laying out by the beach. You got people there who are like fishing. You got people there who are, oh, I'm gonna try and look for buried treasure. So you're kind of like dropped into this world. Everybody else is a little bird or a critter of some kind. So everybody's an animal. It's kind of like Animal Crossing-esque, right?
Yeah, that's
next. Right. And so the entire, like, the thing that sets the game in motion is you come out of your little cabin one day and you're waiting for a phone call. Mm. and like that's it. And so it's kind of like, well, what am I going to do while I wait for this phone call? I guess I'll kill time by doing X, Y, and Z. And like, you gotta eventually, you gotta find your way up the top of a mountain where the reception is good.
Right. That's the thrust of it. I almost lost lost that thread. I felt somehow like that was a spoiler. But yes, your little bird is trying to get reception. That's why you're trying to get higher and higher. And you know, you're compelled to do so because as you explore, you just find new things, and then you can climb higher and higher.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answers any of your questions, Rick. But
right. So okay. So like, I know the dude who made this game. He's a Canadian video game designer who was working on an RPG. He decided to take a break and wanted to make a short game, and he shared a prototype on Twitter. And I think people were interested, so he decided to just make the game himself. So I don't know, man. Like, what? Like, is this game one of those games that you would put in the same category as Untitled Goose Game?
Well, only very broadly, in that you can kind of take it down really quickly. And I mean, for me, I also loved it. It has a very distinctive style. But the gameplay feels very, very different. Goose Game is almost a puzzle game. I think that this is an exploration game, I think, maybe at its core, more than anything else. Exploration and collection.
I guess the thing is because I'm looking at screenshots right now. I guess, like, in terms of, like, the character, the charm, like, it feels like this game is one of those games where it lives and dies based on maybe the quote-unquote writing. Like, I'm not talking about dialogue, but I'm talking about, like, for example, you're saying that this bird has to get to a higher ground to find reception. For what? Mm-hmm. For what exactly? Like, what do you mean? Like, for a cell phone?
For a cell phone, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to tell you more would be to spoil the end of the game.
Okay. It's called Short Hike, and it's available on the Nintendo Switch, because I guess you can play this basically anywhere, right? Microsoft, Windows, Linux, etc.
Yeah, I played it on the Switch. It works great on there. It's got this funky style, too, that's like almost reminiscent of the like PS1. Does that sound right? it's really an interesting throwback. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like polygons, but it's kind of low res. Like it does look, yeah, a PS1 game, I think, looks about right, or like an old N64 game.
But it's beautiful. Like, I mean, yeah. It's like it's perfect for what they're doing, and it has this like sort of gorgeous density to it, a beautiful palette. And it's cool because it's got that retro feel, but it's a, I don't know, different category of retro than we've seen so much of recently.
The bird looks like the bird from Animal Crossing. What is his name? I had him as a character. Oh. He looks exactly like one of the Animal Crossing birds.
I think I've seen him, but I didn't have him in my village. I know you're talking about them.
His name. Anyhow, yeah, the game looks great. So here's the question of the day. Of all the games we've spoken about so far, which is the shortest?
A Short Hike. Oh, I don't know.
Probably Short Hike, yeah.
Or probably
how long is Short Hike, then? If it's so short that it's in the title, how short is it?
3.5 minutes. No, I'm not sure, but it was definitely one of those games where like I could sense that it was gonna wrap up soon, and I was enjoying it so much that I was like doling it out for myself. So it did not take that long. It does welcome like I said, like we were talking about, like we alluded to before we explained the game properly. There are some little secrets in there that you can dig in to try and find, and it's tempting to do so because it's so enjoyable. But geez, I'm not sure. What would you say? Like maybe 3 or 4 hours?
Yeah, I knocked it out in probably 3 hours.
Yeah, I think
that
so.
that was like a pretty leisurely pace, I would say.
Yeah, you want to take it all in. There's a fishing game too. Like I didn't collect all the fish, you know, like there's a couple of things, but
yeah,
you know, it's like you get it too when you're done.
Okay guys, so according to Marty, it is one of the top 5 games of the year so far, but I hear the next game we are going to talk about is maybe the second best game of the year.
Oh man, you're putting me on the spot.
Here's the thing. I'm really excited about this game because I'm a huge fan of Supergiant Games. They are awesome. Oh. Their games are awesome. So please, someone tell me that Hades is as good as they say it is.
Yes, and yes, and yes. I'm not sure what my cohort is going to say here, but if you are a fan of those games, drop what you're doing, drop your podcast mic, and go and play Hades, because when I'm not playing Hades, I'm thinking about playing Hades.
It's true. I mean, I would say listen to the podcast still, But also listen to the podcast while you play Hades, and that way you're doing double duty.
Wait. So before you rave about this game, prior to this game, what was your favorite game from Supergiant?
Transistor, baby.
Yeah.
So I'm embarrassed to admit I have not played Pyre, which is not due to lack of desire to do so. I just haven't gotten there. I really want to play it. But Bastion is my favorite, though. I also really like
Transistor. Oh, I love that game. I actually reviewed it on the website for us.
Bastion's one of my favorite games, period. That game's amazing.
I would actually agree with you, Marty. I think that's my favorite so far. All right, so is Hades better than those games?
Oh, wow. I mean, it is. It feels like the answer is yes, and that's with like so much due respect to those games, just because you can sense that Hades feels like it's like the culmination of their vision, like so many pieces just come together in their style, and it builds this game that you just want to keep playing on multiple levels. It's like a gamer in terms of story. You're just really hooked in, and it's beautiful. I don't know, man. I could go on and on about Hades. It is definitely in my top 5 of the year. The two other games I've talked about are in there for me too, Short Hike and Spiritfarer. And the other game that is contending for me is, of course, Animal Crossing, which we won't talk about today, but I can talk about at length. And I'll be hard pressed to see that game toppled for me. But Hades is a strong contender for number 2 in my books.
You just called Hades a number 2. boy. Content, baby.
I believe it's pronounced Hades.
Hades. All right, Hades. So I was kind of ready to not enjoy this game because I really bounce off of roguelikes. Dead Cells did nothing for me.
Oh, Spelunky, interesting.
Couldn't get into Spelunky. Binding of Isaac, it's all right. Like, so many roguelikes I've tried and just bounced off of, and this one just got me. And I don't know what it is other than like the style or just like if it's game design or what, but did you have a lot of experience playing other games in this genre or?
Oh wait, I gotta jump in really quick.
Yeah,
so
please.
So here's the thing. You maybe just sold me on the game because I kind of gave up on roguelikes after playing Dead Cells. I think Marty, you and I had to talk about Dead Cells on the podcast.
Yep.
And I did not like that game. And I was like, I remember after I got, because I remember that Dead Cells for me was really expensive in Montreal. Games are like really expensive here. Like, you guys complain about your prices. $92 for a Nintendo game in Montreal. I think Dead Cells cost me like $40-$50. And
holy crap.
I did not like that game. And so after Dead Cells, I was like, no more. Like, I'm moving on. But I like Binding of Isaac. Like, there are some of those roguelikes I like, but I just decided I don't want to play any more of the genre anymore.
Well, that's so interesting. I mean, yeah, it's very interesting that you bring up Dead Cells. And Rick and I did disagree on this. I'm kind of similar. My upper limit is pretty much Dead Cells. I actually loved Dead Cells, but I am not usually huge on roguelikes. I don't know. What's the difference between a roguelike and a roguelite? Please, somebody help me, but I'm not sure. But at any rate, this is like, so I feel like we should explain a little bit more of like what is happening in the game. Like, you are Zagreus, is that right?
Zagreus.
Zagreus, son of Hades, trying to escape from hell, Hades. And you know, it's a hack and slash. You go through, try to destroy all these monsters, get a different cool weapon every time. But there are all these different upgrade systems happening in tandem. Mm-hmm. So they're happening like in your one game go through, but then they're happening like in the overall game as well. And that aspect of it is all very compelling. But then also what they did is they have this storytelling aspect. So every time your character dies and goes back, it moves the story forward. And the writing is great. The characters are great. The art is great. So you've got this gameplay loop hooking you in with the story loop. And it is just so addictive. You just want to get in. And the runs, like as you get good, you feel like you're so good. I love it. The other roguelike I think I love is Slay the Spire, if you're willing to call
that a roguelike. Yes, that's a good game, though. That's a good game.
I love that game.
Is that the card one?
Oh, please play it right now. Yes.
All right.
Oh, man.
I never played it, yeah.
Oh, boy. I play that game all day long. It's one of those games I just go back to again and again. It's like comfort food for me.
To me, I think that's what Hades is going to turn into. I reviewed it for the site, and I did... how much do we want to talk about spoilers?
No, I don't think we should get into spoilers. If you're referring to the actual story and narrative, like, I know a lot of people, they don't really care about the narrative story, but there are people who do. So even if it's just one person that cares, I don't want to spoil it for that one person.
100%. So without any spoilers, I will say that I did clear, quote unquote, the game. But that being said, there's a lot more to do after you clear it.
That's when the game begins.
That's when the game really begins.
That's what Slay the Spire is like, too.
Okay, good to know. So there's like a comparable kind of element there. So it's
less,
like
less story, though. Much less story.
Yeah. So that being said, I reviewed the game for this site, and I kind of put it down for like, I don't know, maybe a week or two. And then last night I was like, oh, I should brush up on Hades for the podcast. I didn't intend to be up until 1:30 in the morning playing Hades, right. But like that's what happens. You know what I mean?
You know that game that gets those, it gets its hooks in you like that. Like it's really, it gives you that just one more run feeling, and exactly. I love it so much when I get hooked on a game like that, and I'm like, maybe I'll just stay up until 2:30 in the morning.
The thing is, I really, really dig your review, which again, readers, go check out the review over at GoombaStomp.com. So, because you wrote, you were referencing the love story, or the love angle, or something. But anyways, you wrote, actually, I'm just gonna find it right now. It is revealed in exactly the right way at exactly the right time. Even if it is expected, it still has a punch. Sometimes how a story is told is just as important as the story itself. That is such like a great way to wrap up a review.
Yeah, that's very nice to say.
Oh, thank you guys. Appreciate that. It's. I think it's what's wild is that like if you, I mean, I don't know about you guys. When I grew up, when I was in freshman year of high school, they had us read the Greek mythology tales.
Yeah.
We had to get like very familiar with them. So playing this game was like, oh dang, I know all these stories. I know all these characters. And it's
what's
like,
up, Artemis?
You know what I mean? Like, oh Dionysus, yeah. Like, I love that guy. Like, I want to party with him. Like, so it felt, even though it was like, oh, I'm kind of familiar with all of these characters and sort of their relationships, it still felt really, really, I don't know, fulfilling to see them written about in a new way or to see kind of the fresh take that Supergiant would put on these characters. Even though you might know like, oh, okay, Hades and Poseidon are brothers, like you might like know that in your brain, it's still cool to see it in the game and how they kind of like snipe at each other. Like it's very cool.
Yeah, they really ground the characters in this really cool way. It's just got this sharp writing, and yeah, I mean, it's got Supergiant written all over it. It's great voice acting too, of course, from them. And I feel like it's getting a lot of hype in at least games journalism corners. I don't know if, like how that reflects the real world, but as far as I'm concerned, it's deserved for sure.
Yeah, I always try to temper like whenever I see a game is getting good reviews. I'm always like, is it that good?
Yeah.
But then with this game, I was like, oh yeah, no, it's every bit as good as they say. And this is somebody, again, I tend to bounce off of this kind of game, but it's very good.
It is. And I have like different type of gamer friends too. And like, we all talk about games or whatever, but this is definitely one that is like, we're all lighting up over it. Like we're all sort of like comparing notes about how far you are and like how you're upgrading different weapons and like what you're doing in different situations. It's definitely like,
So I got to ask you, Marty, again, without spoilers, have you gotten any clears?
No, I have not. No.
How have you got? Okay. Okay. Again, tricky without spoilers. How far have you made it?
I'm at the top, so that's
okay. Okay, great, top. Awesome. Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah. You'll get there.
I know. I will. I believe. Maybe tonight.
My last question is: how long do you think it's going to take you to finish the game?
Ooh boy. Okay. So, all right. Finish or like 100%.
Finish.
Okay. So well,
you've already gotten a clear, right?
I've gotten a couple of clears. Yep. But again, that doesn't mean too much. I'm trying to pull up my main menu here right now. I have put probably, okay, it says I've done 38 runs.
Nice.
And a run averages like, I don't know, 45 minutes maybe.
Once you get going, yeah.
Once you get going. So extrapolate out of that. I don't know. I anticipate dropping into this game, doing a run every now and then, I could probably do this game for, I don't know, at least 40, 50, 60 hours, like anywhere in there.
Easily. No, yeah. And I mean, I don't know because I have not gotten the clears, but I'm given the impression that, like, whatever you get through and you just want to get right back in there and, you know, get even better at it. And 100%. I mean, the evidence is already there as you get through the earlier levels and you get better with the weapons. You just want to keep playing and keep upgrading. And it's just fantastic.
I think the last thing I want to say about the mechanic, well, maybe the last thing, we'll see. One of the things I want to call out about the mechanics is that, like, I think one of the reasons why Dead Cells didn't really do anything for me, or Spelunky, is that, like, you'd find a cool upgrade. Like, oh, cool, I got this, you know, great bow and arrow or whatever. And then you die and you lose it. And it's like, well, I guess I'll never see it again.
Yeah.
This game has a great balance of, and you mentioned it earlier, Marty, a great balance of, you get these permanent upgrades that will kind of inform your next couple of runs. Whether it's like, oh, you get a little health boost for your next run, or, oh, you find a thing that lets you find extra treasure in every room or something like that. So that kind of thing really incentivizes, okay, even though I died and I lost all my cool upgrades for this particular run, I still am gaining like a couple of permanent things to kind of keep me in the zone. It makes it always feel like you're progressing. It's very cool.
Yeah, no, that's what makes it feel better for me too. Because like in a true roguelike, I get frustrated. For some reason in Dead Cells, it was enough for me to keep me going. But I totally hear you on it. And if I were hard pressed, I would argue that this is a better game.
Well, I mean, there's no accounting for taste. Like sometimes you just like the vibe of a particular game better. But for me, the vibe of Hades is like just off the charts.
Well, yeah, but I think that so much of it is a testament to this really successful game loop, which is what you were just describing. But it's so important to like lean into it, because there's so much satisfaction in this space where like each run gives you upgrades within the run, but then your whole character is getting upgrades, so something's good. It's just, it really keeps you coming back, and the story advances and it's delightful and well presented. It's just like, talk about the total package. They hit it out of the park.
Yeah, it's stunning.
So far, I think we've recommended, what, 5-6 games for listeners to try out? 6 games that sound amazing, but I think if I had to choose one so far, guys, I think I'm going to start with Short Hike. That said, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with a surprise segment, which you guys will know about. Stick around.
Few tales are told of Hades, whose very name inspires fear and penitence, reminding us of the inevitable fate which we all share. I, however, mean to tell you such a tale. Listen carefully.
There she is. It's got to be her. Then here goes nothing. In the name of Hades, Olympus, I accept this message.
Hail, noble cousin. Now, let's get you from that miserable place. I'll see that all of us upon Olympus do our part, beginning here with me.
That sound. That was revelry? People having a good time? Well, sure then. In the name of Hades, Olympus, I will accept this message.
Hey there, Zagman. How's it going? Look, you have got to get here with the rest of us already. We've been saving you a spot. Let me see what I can do. Make life a little sweeter for you in the meantime.
This one was bound to show up, I guess. In the name of Hades, Olympus, I accept this message.
You've got quite the fighting spirit in you there, I have to say. Most intriguing, and yet no surprise for someone born in hell itself. You come on out of there and tell me all about it. I'm a fellow student of death, you see.
Welcome back to the NExpress Nintendo Podcast, and this is a bonus special segment which you guys will know about because I need some help, guys. I was talking about this on Workplace over the weekend. We've talked about it on the podcast several times, and I got to talk about it again. I got a problem, and it's called physical media. And I think I need to get rid of my physical media. Here's the thing. So, over the weekend, I decided I need to clean up the house, right? Which means clean up the video game room, clean up the bedroom, clean up the study, clean the hallways, you know. And the problem with all of these rooms is there's, like, shelf after shelf after shelf of vinyl records and DVDs and Blu-rays and Nintendo Switch games and Wii U games and games from GameCube that I can't play anymore because my GameCube broke. And I got so much physical media. Guys, I have like over 2,000 DVDs and Blu-rays, which I used to get really cheap when I worked at the video store. But still, I have over 2,000. And I'm never going to have time to watch these movies again. I'm never going to have time to play all of these video games again. And so here's the thing. I also do a movie podcast, right? So the last 3-4 episodes, we reviewed a movie that I actually own on DVD and or Blu-ray. And yet I just decided to watch the movie on Amazon. So I'm like, why do I own the DVD or Blu-ray? Because it's just more convenient to load it up on Amazon instead of looking for the DVD and Blu-ray, even though technically I categorize my DVD, so it should be easy to find, but for whatever reason I couldn't find these movies. So my question for you, and I'm going to start with Campbell, is where do you stand on physical versus digital? Have you made the switch, or do you still collect?
Oh, yeah. Well, I got to say, all right, outside of the game world, I am a bookworm. First and foremost, actually, and I collect books, okay? So I also have a real bad problem with physical media because I have stacks of books. But here's the thing. Where I stand on books is the same way I stand when it comes to collecting games. When you collect something physical, it's something that matters to you, you know? So when I buy a book, it's going to be like a special antique book or something. So like, when it comes to games, I have a physical copy of Super Mario 3D All-Stars, because Mario Galaxy is my favorite game of all time, and I want to have that physically on Switch, so I always have it, you know, even if it gets taken off the eShop or whatever. I always have the physical cartridge.
Okay, but here's the thing. First of all, books are different, because, like, I don't know about you, but I don't like to read. Like, I already spend too much time in front of a screen, so if I can actually read a book instead of reading, you know, a digital print, I would prefer the actual physical book. So that has a lot to do with not wanting to spend too much time in front of a screen or additional time in front of a screen, and also like hurting your eyes and your vision and whatever. So for me, books are different. But the thing is, even with a book, I don't know if you're ever going to read all of your books again. Maybe you will. Maybe when you retire. I seriously doubt it, because people are still writing books. Like, there's new books coming out week after week. But you can donate those books to like a community center or a school. You know, I don't know if kids still read these days, but whatever. But the thing about video games is I feel the same way, right? Like, I'm looking at my movies or my video games, and I'm like, Mario, Zelda, whatever, these games mean so much to me. And I've said it on the podcast before, where back in the days when I used to review, when I had time to review the new releases, I would get the physical copy sent to me from Nintendo in Montreal, right? But then they switched and they were just sending digital review codes. And so they would send me like the digital code for like Fire Emblem or Mario, like Odyssey, right? And I would end up buying the game again, even though Nintendo gave me a free copy because I wanted the physical copy. And I'm like, I'm crazy. Why would I spend money on a game that I got for free? And so the thing is, the way I look at it now, right, is I see all of this stuff collecting dust. And it doesn't really matter, I think, if I have the physical to some extent, because it's really my experience, like my memory playing the game or watching the movie that matters. It's experiencing the story, reading the book, watching the movie, listening to the music. And I think the thing is, it boils down to clutter. Also, it's more convenient to load up a song on your computer or your phone or whatever, or Spotify, than it is to put on a vinyl record, even though the vinyl record still sounds better. So I'm conflicted. Like, I still do not know what I should do, but I just know, realistically, I know I will never have time to play all of these games again. I will never have time to watch these movies again. I will never have time to listen to all of these records again. So again, why? Why? Marty, where do you stand?
I mean, I think that you guys are kind of talking around the same space of where I stand with it, which is like, I struggle with the same stuff. We're all game nerds and book nerds, no doubt. I'm surrounded by stacks and stacks of books and games and DVDs. But what I try to do is only keep it's like Marie Kondo, right? Like, do you guys know that reference, that like that the art of tidying up method? Like, where you only keep what brings you joy, right?
Right, yeah, but I was watching this Korean soap opera on Netflix. I can't remember the name of the show. It's so good, though. Dude, it was so good. But anyways, there was this episode, and in the episode, So in the episode, the girl, the housewife, she said that she's like, only keep what really makes you happy. And so she cleans out her room in her house and she ends up with like two things, like two items. And that's it. She's like, these are the only two items that really, really bring me happiness. Right. And so she gets rid of everything. But here's the thing. When I was a kid, I've always collected things. G.I. Joes, He-Man, marbles, hockey cards, baseball cards, you name it. Right. But the thing is, when I collected hockey cards, baseball cards, comic books, a lot of those comic books and baseball cards and whatever, or even toys, they become valuable. Like, they're worth a lot of money. Like, I'm staring at my Killing Joke, like the original Killing Joke, or the first Flash comic book, right? So as a collector, you can collect things that later are worth a lot of money. Okay, so that I get, right? So but not all of it. Like, the problem, okay, so here's the thing really quick. My DVDs, right? I used to have DVDs that were worth a lot of money, like RoboCop. The Criterion at one point was selling for like $200. The Pasolini movie, Sallow. I had three copies and everybody wanted to buy it off me. And then they re-released it on Blu-ray and stuff. And then now even my DVDs aren't really worth much because they re-released everything on Blu-ray, which is better quality. So what's the point in having DVDs if they released a better version?
DVDs is a really tricky question. I mean, I do think about it a lot in terms of like where I'm going digital. And I definitely think of it in particular to like narrow it over to movies. And I mean, I mean it when I say like I keep the ones that I really like. I keep the movies that I know that I'm going to want to watch again, or at least want to have access to, which is like its own thing in your brain, right? Like, I could watch it if I wanted to anyways, because digital platforms are unreliable, which, like, as a Nintendo podcast, obviously we can relate to that deeply, because Nintendo puts things in and out of the vault all the time. So, you know, I'm looking also on my shelf at like, I have a copy of like, I have so few video games like on my shelves, but I have like Shadow of the Colossus on my shelf and like the original Katamari Damacy. So like, there are some games that I just like look at them and I just know how much I loved them. So I like to have them, but I get rid of a lot. And I do have to say at this point, I'm pretty digital. For a long time I wasn't, but with this generation in particular, the Switch, the only games I own on physical are Breath of the Wild and Splatoon 2. That's it. It's pretty wild. Yeah, it's really wild.
I went digital around PS3 times, kind of out of, like, I had just gotten back into video games after, like, not playing them for many years. And I was like, oh, I really want to play Bioshock, and I can't find a copy anywhere. So I just downloaded it, and it, like, changed the way I look at how to buy stuff. I love not having stuff, you guys. Oh, my gosh, it's crazy. That said, same boat in terms of like my books and my comics. Like, yeah, obviously I'm still going to have stacks and stacks of books and comics. But as far as games go, I have no qualms about going digital. Like, I have my, Mario Odyssey digital, like Splatoon 2 digital, pretty much everything on my PlayStation is digital. Like, I don't know, games for some reason or other, I don't have as much of an issue, having digital copies of that. That said, a few years back, my mom found my N64 in like a closet or something. All these great games, Harvest Moon 64, StarCraft 64, remember that? All these great games. And I like sold them because I was like, oh, I don't need these anymore. And guess what? Now I miss them. So I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, that's my roundabout way of saying is like, man, I have no idea what the right answer is. I think if you can... if you can like live with yourself, I think go digital. But if you want the stuff, then have the stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. If you think it really makes you happy, but I think it's a false happiness. Like, okay, here's the thing. It's the way my brain works. Okay, so check this out. This is really weird. So I have this problem with collecting things, as you know. So a few years ago, my niece decided to buy me a Pop figure for Christmas. I never even like thought about buying Pop figures. I just thought it was like stupid for whatever reason. And then the following year, my friend got me a Pop figure, like the Funko ones, the Funko, right? He got me a Pop figure for my birthday, I think. And so I had two. And I was like, you know what? I kind of dig these dudes. Like, because like what I like about them is you have these different franchises. Like, it could be a horror film, like Freddy, or it could be like a video game, like Cuphead, or it could be like Alfred Hitchcock, or I don't know, like Alex Trebek or LeBron James, like an athlete, a basketball player, Tupac Shakur, Prince, Elton John, whatever. But they all sort of feel like they exist in the same world now, right? Because the pop figures all look the same. It's not like you're playing with your G.I. Joes and He-Man and you're putting them next to your shelf and the G.I. Joe's like half the size of He-Man. You know what I mean? So as a collectible, it kind of looks cool having these dudes on my shelf, even if the Flash is standing next to Carrie and Carrie is standing next to Quint from Jaws, who's standing next to Agent Cooper from Twin Peaks, who's standing next to Bret the Hitman Hart from WWE Wrestling, because they kind of like, they seem to fit in the same world. But it's also a collectible, right? So it's not like I can download this thing digitally. Like it's, you know what I mean? It's not the same. But with a movie, like it's the movie. It's not the actual packaging, right? It's the movie. It's not the DVD or the disc or whatever. It's the actual movie that you gotta watch. That's the experience. It's not like, that's what gives you sort of the quote unquote enjoyment, right?
Well, not to open up a whole other can of worms, but there's definitely aspects to like the DVDs and their menus and the features that are on them that are treasures, as I'm sure you know. But
so, yes, but here's the thing. So like, no, but you're right. So my friend said the exact same thing. And I'm like, yeah, but you know what? Like once I watched the making of, like I just reviewed The Exorcist 3, right? With Patrick on the Sword of Cinema podcast. I was like, yeah. once I watched the making of the documentary and the actual movie and the director's cut, I've now seen this movie four times plus the bonus features. I'm never going to watch the bonus features again. Maybe I'll watch the movie again at one point in time in my life, but I'm never going to watch the supplements again. Like that's over with. So at the same time, like it really doesn't matter. And also, like all of that's on YouTube anyways. So like you could just watch the bonus features on YouTube for most like DVDs and Blu-rays at this point in time. So I don't know, man. I'm conflicted because I feel like I'm still collecting like pop figures. I'm still collecting, I don't know, like, I'm collecting Switch games still because I still buy physical.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by your explanation of the pop figure collection because you, for the first time, you've actually helped me to understand why that's an appealing collection. That's a really good explanation for why it's fun to see all of them together. They've never appealed to me, and now I'm like, oh, actually, that is kind of cool.
so like, okay, Bride of Frankenstein is one of my 10 favorite movies of all time. So I got Frankenstein, the actual pop figure, but Bride of Frankenstein was sold out. And if you want to buy it on eBay, they're selling it for like $300, $400. So I couldn't get Bride of Frankenstein, but I got the Gremlins Dressed in Drag, the from Gremlins 2, The New Batch. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie. And so when I put that pop figure Gremlin next to the pop figure from Frankenstein, they look like they came from the same movie. And so it's just like, that's what I think the appeal is about pop figures. It's, and so like the thing is, it's like with Switch, right? Like I have PlayStation, Nintendo Switch, and Xbox, but I buy all of my games for Switch are physical. Like I buy all the physical copies. For PlayStation, I buy physical copies. For Xbox, I don't care. I don't care if it's digital because I don't have an attachment, an emotional attachment to any of the characters or franchises. Like who? Master Chief? I don't care about Master Chief. Like Gears? I don't care about Gears. Like they don't have, you know what I mean? Like at least Sony has like Crash, even though I don't really like Crash. He's okay. They have like Naughty Dog, which has like Drake and you know, we got Last of Us. Like we have characters in those games. We have like these franchises, like you know, it can even be Final Fantasy games or even like the Resident Evil games I buy on PlayStation because that's just the way my brain works. So it's just, I don't know. I just feel like I'm going crazy. I feel like the physical media is driving me crazy.
Well, I think the diagnosis is to get rid of some of your stuff, especially the stuff that you don't really like.
How? How do you choose between your children? okay. Chris said that. No, but
there you go.
Christopher said this on Workplace. He's like, oh, I. So here's what Chris said. Chris said. He's one of our movie reviewers. He's like, I sold all of my DVDs and I bought them on Blu-ray. So I was like, I can't do that. I can't sell like almost 2,000 DVDs and buy them on Blu-ray. It's going to cost me thousands of dollars, which I can't afford. And I don't have time to rewatch them. And then he's like, oh, just buy the ones that you really like. And I'm like, okay, but like I'm staring at my horror collection, right? So, I mean, like, which ones am I going to get rid of? Like, I like horror movies so much. Like, and even my Criterion collection, they're all great movies. You know, but am I going to watch Akira Kurosawa's Rashomon again? Or Throne of Blood? Or High and Low? Or Ran? which I own all these movies, but I've seen them like 2 times each, which is enough. Like, am I ever going to watch Kurosawa films again? Like, I don't know. it's madness, call, man. Madness.
It's hard. I've realized lately that I think I just don't, and this goes for games and movies, I don't revisit a lot of stuff, which makes my decision somewhat easier, I guess, because I'm like, oh, if I'm not going to revisit this, then why do I need to own it? You know what I mean?
Right, yeah, because I feel like when you're younger, and you're like, I don't have kids, but I'm like, you get older, you get a job, you have responsibilities, you know, some people have kids, like Tim, for example, you don't have time to rewatch movies and play video games over and over. You just have time for the new stuff, if you're lucky, right? So I feel like it's like when you're younger, and maybe when you retire, like maybe when you're retired and you're like 60, 65 years old, 50, I don't know when you're going to retire and you want to go back and revisit some of the older games, it might matter, but we don't know, because by the time we get to the age in which we're like 50, 60, whatever, 70, who knows what the world's going to look like? Maybe everything's going to be digital and you won't even be able to play. Like here's the thing, like, you know, speaking of playing like DVDs and Blu-rays, back in the days, and when I say back in the days, I'm talking about like 5 years ago, you used to be able to buy computers, like laptops, that had an actual DVD player inside. They don't sell laptops with DVD players inside. So like, okay, so this is what happened with, so I watched Frailty yesterday, actually. So Frailty is a movie that I own on DVD. It's this great horror film directed by Bill Paxton. Anyways, so I own the DVD. But it's on Amazon. So the reason why I decided to watch on Amazon instead of on DVD was because if I wanted to watch it on DVD, I would have to go in my video game room and play it on my PlayStation. And I just didn't want to go in the video game room. I just wanted to watch something from my bedroom and just lie down. Well, not lie down, but sit on my bed, relax, and watch a movie instead of sitting in the video game room again, which I've been there all day long, right? So it's just a little thing like that. And I decided to watch on Amazon. So that's what I mean. Like, it's convenient. It's more convenient to load it up on Amazon on the internet than it is for me to actually try to track down a device that actually plays a DVD. And then, you know, when you look at the PlayStation 5, like, there's two versions, right? There's one version, I think, I could be wrong, but there's one version which doesn't even come with an option for physical media, right? And then there's one which you can play discs. Am I getting this right?
Yeah, there's a digital only version, and there's one that has a disc drive. Yeah.
So the way I look at it, we're one generation away from no more physical media when it comes to video game consoles. Like, I really think, like, I know a lot of people say, no, that's never going to happen. I feel like it's happening. I feel like that is the next step. And then
the pushback is that, like, the digital platforms are definitely not to be trusted to reliably have Frailty on them. Is that's my only thing, but I definitely can relate. Like, I feel like that's a turning point moment for sure when you have that moment. That just happened to me with Harold and Maude, which I am somebody who I do like. I do have a few comfort food movies that I like turn back to if I'm like just wanting to relax and I want to watch like one of my favorite films. I love it from start to finish, so I'll just watch it again and again. And I did that with Harold and Maude, and I was like, yeah, okay, I'll pull out the DVD. And then I was like, oh no, whoop, it's right here on Amazon, and I'll just watch it on Amazon. And those are the moments when you like feel like the world is making fun of you, kind of. And you're why do I have stuff?
I have 8 seasons of The Simpsons on DVDs. And then I was like, all of it's on Disney Plus. So it's like, well, all right, like, what do I do with these giant box sets, you know?
It is fun to revisit TV shows. Like, I have, what's the one I just watched over again? The Wonder Years. So I have the, they sent me the box set, which the box set, it's like a locker, like a mini locker. And it has like this booklet and special features, has all the seasons. It's an amazing like box set. Right. And so I rewatched all of the Wonder Years. It was fantastic. So that was, for example, like, I can't watch The Wonder Years. I think it's streaming on Netflix or Amazon. I can't remember, Hulu, one of those. But it's not available in Canada, right? Because you guys have different like options than we do. And so for me, it was great that I own the box set, which, by the way, they sent me, so I didn't even spend money on it. But, you know, it's few and far between where I actually need to own the physical media of a game or book in order for me to, or a movie in order for me to watch it, read it, or play it, because usually it's available somewhere. Like, video games are different, because here's the thing, just to end off this rant. Video games are bigger, longer, and more expensive. So, like, if you really want to illegally download a song, you can do it in like a matter of like seconds. If you want to download a movie or stream it, you can stream it online. You can also download a movie. Like if you're really desperate, like let's say the movie has never been released on DVD or Blu-ray, maybe VHS, like way back in the day, and you really want to watch it. And the only way to watch is you got to download it. Well, you could download the movie, like, let's face it, in like a few minutes, right? If you want to download a video game, like as big of a video game as, say, I don't know, NBA 2K, how long will it take to download the game? And where would you play it? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's completely different. So in 10 years from now, if you want to play Splatoon, how are you going to play Splatoon on the Wii? Like, you could play the single campaign, like single player campaign, which is like, I can't remember. They last like what, like an hour or two? In the original Splatoon, the single player campaign was really short, if I remember correctly.
It was pretty good.
Yeah. So, but games like that, like those games can't last forever, right? Just because, I mean, they could re-release it theoretically. But you, like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's different with video games, but like with movies, like they still play, like, there's a drive-in in Montreal, right? Because movie theaters are closed. So they're playing movies like Scream and Beetlejuice and all these classics that you can go see on the big screen. So I don't even need my DVD. So it's just weird. The only thing I'll say is that one of my friends, he does something I think is really smart, where when it comes to movies, the reason why he buys Blu-rays is because he doesn't go to the movie theater. So he's like, well, I can spend $20, go see it at the movie theater. I can spend $20, wait for it to get released on Blu-ray. And then at least I own it and then I can rewatch it again. So, but he doesn't go to the movie theater. I like to watch movies in a movie theater. I like to, you know, with my Nintendo Switch, the advantage of me having the physical media, the only real true advantage, apart from the fact that I guess I physically actually feel like I own it, is I can lend it to my nephew. So if my nephew wants to play Paper Mario, he doesn't have to take my actual entire Switch to play it. He could just take the actual game, right? So that's the advantage. But anyways, all this to say, it's just madness. And I don't think there is an answer. I think you're right, Marty. Like, it depends on a person. It depends on, like, the specific game, movie, book, comic book, whatever. You're going to want to keep some. You're going to want to get rid of some. But one thing I've learned in life is whenever I get rid of it, like you, Cameron, with the N64, I regret it. Like, I gave away all of my G.I. Joes to my cousin, and I regret it. Like, even though it's a toy, and I'm never going to play with it again, like, the original Snake Eye, Storm Shadow, Cobra Commander, like, Serpentor, like, all of these dudes, I had, like, 50, 60, like, G.I. Joe figures, if not more, and I gave them away, and I regret it. Like
you suffered that's the same childhood tragedy. I gave my G.I. Joes away, and I also regret it deeply.
I bought my brother a Storm Shadow G.I. Joe for his birthday one year off of eBay for that exact reason. Like, somewhere, you know, he lost a Storm Shadow when he was a kid, and I got him one. It was the most perfect nostalgic, like, gift, you know?
Yeah. And then, but what happens is they end up re-releasing the action figures, like He-Man, G.I. Joe. Over the years, they released the next wave and the next wave. So there's now, like, four different versions of Snake Eyes, and, you know, technically the original one is worth a lot of money because it's hard to get, but it's not even the best version anymore because the best version came out like 10, 20 years later because they just made better toys. Same with He-Man. Like, it's just, so then you're like, well, why do I have the originals? These are so much better. Anyways, I think that's it for the N-Express Nintendo podcast. We will be back in November with a review of Pikmin. We're going to take about a week and a half off. Guys, tell our listeners where they can find you online. Marty.
My name is Marty, and if you put the word stuff, STUFF, after my name and .com, but also I am on Goomba Stomp writing and talking about things whenever I can be. Thanks so much for having me.
And Campbell.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at my ridiculously formal handle, Campbell S. Gill. And, of course, you can find everything I write over at GoombaStomp.com. I'm one of the indie games editors there. You can see a bunch of indie reviews, interviews, and spotlights over there.
And Cameron.
Yeah, I'm also writing reviews and impressions over on GoombaStomp.com. And yeah, I'm working on a website, but I don't have anything at the moment.
Cool. You can find me over on Twitter, Sorted Cinema, and listen to the Sorted Cinema podcast. Patrick is my co-host, and we review really good movies. And also, if you like wrestling, I have a wrestling podcast called Talk AEW. And I guess that's about it. Follow us on Twitter and visit our website, GoombaStomp.com. Thank you for listening.
Together, my friend.